I got six.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the United City of Yorkville Public Safety Committee. It is Thursday, January 7th, the year of our Lord, 2021 at 6 p.m. I am joined by my fellow people, Jackie Milshewski, Dan Brandier, as well as the Chief of Police, Lieutenant Chief of Police.
Where's Dan?
I'm here, Joel.
Aaron's over there. And Bartle. We're going to move citizen comment to the very end of the meeting, and we're going to allow Bear to proceed with his presentation.
Awesome. So real quick before Bear starts, just to let everybody know that this was the CIT Crisis Intervention Team program was one of our goals that we developed as a department in 2020. And Bear approached me right as I took over as chief talking about this program and how important he believed this program was. And so Bear has been working extremely hard with Garrett Carlisle, one of our sergeants, to research and develop and really kind of hone in on what it is that Yorkville Police Department wants to do. So I'm going to turn it over to them, and I think we're going to be very pleased with what we hear.
Awesome. Thanks, Chief. Am I muffled, or should I leave this on, or how do we want to do this? Can you understand?
Sounds good.
All right. So, as Chief Jensen was saying, the crisis intervention team has kind of been something that's been in the works since he took office. Right after Chief Jensen started, let me turn my light on, hang on. We got our first few officers trained at that point. And so during this presentation, while I'm gonna try to limit to about 15 minutes or so, it's gonna go over some different facets of it. It's gonna go over what crisis intervention training is, some scenarios of where it's used, how we're gonna be able to track it as an agency to make sure that we're doing our due diligence. And it's also going to go over the resources and those that we're really going to incorporate into it. Followed up by it, we're also going to bring in our citizens at risk, which ties hand in hand with our crisis intervention work, which we're really excited to do. Through this whole project, with Chief Jensen and his support, Garrett Carlisle, myself, Officer Robbie Hart, and Officer Nick Mertis, we were kind of the core group just to try to get it off the ground. Robbie is one of our senior patrolmen, and then Nick Mertis is actually one of our newer officers that came from Memphis, Tennessee, where the crisis intervention model started, and Nick was a CIT officer there. So it's really cool with all the different perspectives that we're able to bring into it. So I'm gonna do a screen share as far as just a PowerPoint, just so we can kind of stay on task, and I don't know, I'm kind of proud because I put one together. So. So as far as everything with CIT, up there, every single one of our officers at CIT trained is gonna wear that pin. That's from our graduation through the IDLETS Training and Standards Board. That basically says we attended a 40-hour course and are CIT certified. So the purpose of our program is gonna be to improve the department's response to incidents involving people who are known or have gone through who have mental illness, developmental limitations, or who may be in crisis. Now, as we focus on certain things here, crisis intervention is something we use daily in police work. Whether it's somebody who's struggling with substance abuse, somebody who's just having a depressed moment, somebody that may be a part of self-harm, whatever it may be, domestic violence, these all fall under crisis intervention. And one of the things we really push out to our staff as they're trained is that we don't rush through one single incident. And it's really cool to see our staff and the amount of time that they spend with these people in need. Not to go in story time too much, but Sergeant Carlisle on a shift recently within the last couple months, one of his CIT officers was dispatched over to a local medical establishment for somebody that was having a pretty hard moment. Now, this person didn't need to be transported. They were seeing their psychiatrist, but this person was very angry and very upset, kind of confrontational with their officers. Our one CIT officer was able to build a rapport with him, and at the end of it, at the beginning, the officer thought he was honestly going to probably get assaulted or punched. At the end, the guy was tearing up and gave him a hug. So that's just one of the things that shows how our staff is able to adapt and build rapport. It was kind of one of those proud moments where it was just be able to build that relationship. So that's our purpose right there in the PowerPoint. In each one of these folders, and then there's electric copy, you're gonna have a policy for it as well. Garrett was able to establish that. Then we've got our mission statement. Some of these screens are kind of up. Let me see if I can move around a little bit. So Crisis Intervention Team is a partnership between the Yorkville PD working with mental health consumers and family members. Our collective goal is to champion dignity and compassion for those who are experiencing mental health crisis and those with developmental limitations. CIT will exist to assist citizens to normalize and understand their physical and emotional reactions to mental health crisis and developmental limitations. CIT officers will be part of a specialized team which can respond to a crisis at any time and will work with the community to assist in progressive physical and emotional recovery from crisis events. So I think that mission statement is just spot on for what our mission is as an agency. Then we've got our vision statement. That's going to be a partnership between the Yorkville Police Department and community, where people in mental health crisis and those with developmental limitations find safety, help, and hope. So as we talk about this, you guys probably want to go, well, you sat through a 40-hour class. What did you go over? What did you guys actually grasp? What did you consume? So I can tell you what, while it was 40 hours, it flew by. The amount of stuff that they threw at us, everybody was hungry for more just to learn how we could do our jobs better. So for CIT training, we were exposed to the following: mental illness signs and symptoms, child and adolescent issues, geriatric issues, co-occurring disorders and substance abuse, verbal de-escalation and tactical response, returning veterans with PTSD, risk assessment and crisis intervention skills, law enforcement response and legal issues, medical conditions and psychotropic medications, autism and intellectual and developmental disabilities, and community resources. So as we go over this, our ultimate goal that we are standing to today, and which we will see out, is that every single police officer goes through this 40-hour training. And it doesn't just stop at that. We've got our mandated training and other things where we can stay on top of, you know, hopefully everything that changes in our world and mental health issues and other things such as that. As far as those that have been trained, currently we have 12, we have 13, but Sergeant Jelewski just retired. He was one of our CIT officers. Unfortunately, one of the classes that was canceled took away 4 of our slots, or else we'd be at 17 right now. I can say this much, any class we can get into, we will get into and push those officers through. It's just been a case of 2020 and COVID cancellations. As far as those that we have trained, this includes our frontline supervisors, our school resource officer, and our patrol officers. So one of the important things with our supervisors is that they're able to bring this to their shifts and oversee that things are being done properly, but also the legality issues too of what we have. Because if somebody's suffering a mental health crisis and we have to do an involuntary committal, we're essentially taking their freedom away, lawfully, but it has to be done to make sure that we can do this. So some scenarios, you're gonna say, okay, well, this is great and all, you've got paperwork on it, but how are you guys gonna go about pushing out this program? So if we throw some things out to you guys, like scenarios, if we've got an involuntary committal where somebody does not wanna seek medical treatment on their own and so forth refuses to, but they are a harm to themselves, a harm to others, or they cannot take care of themselves, then it is mandated that we take physical custody of them to go get a psychological evaluation. So it's at this point that if this would be the case, whether it's the person's first time or their 100th time, this is gonna cause some kind of emotional distress to them or their family members. So if it's the first time, or like I said, the 100th time, where's our follow-up? Where does it show? It doesn't just end at the ambulance ride. What are we doing to seek out to these family members or that person that's getting treatment? If they're gonna be an inpatient, then they're gonna be in the best place for that time being. But what about their support staff? What about their family? What are we doing to follow up with them? So there are some packets that have been put together that go over some of our resource manuals and everything else that go over our outside resources, whether it's NAMI, whether it's through the Kendall County Health Department, and things such as that. I'll tell you one thing, if there's a mental health crisis and I'm taking care of a loved one, and they're going into inpatient care, my sole focus is them safely getting to the hospital. But if I had a police officer or my local police department following up with me the next day, and just with a simple phone call or stopping by the house for 5 minutes and saying, hey Bear, we want to check on your loved one. How are they doing? By the way, what can we do for you? Here's some local services we have. What can we do? And learn more about the individual just to be able to build that contact and then follow up later as well. Maybe it's a week later. How are they doing? And that type of follow-up. Maybe there's some kind of trigger that this person has where they said, you know what, you guys did a great job, but this kind of triggered them and maybe made them emotionally a little bit, brought them up a little bit, or this was something you guys did that helped de-escalate the situation. So things such as that. If we talk about self-harm and unfortunately death sometimes, unfortunately, each year we have somebody take their own life, and it's a terrible thing. And it puts so much on the family and friends and everything such as that. Once this person passes away, what are we doing to follow up with them? Are we sharing things with them such as, hey, here's a local grief counseling group. Here's things such as that. You know, what can we do to lean on you guys? Just checking in on them, just saying, hey, we're sorry you went through this, but what can we do for you? Maybe if they're a religious family, hey, you know, getting in contact with their local parish or church and things such as that. That's another thing we've really tried to develop over this last year is our relationships with our local churches and pastors. Some other scenarios would be self-admission. Sometimes we have people reach out to us just saying, you know what, I'm having a bad day, I'm having bad thoughts, I need help, I need to go to the hospital. And I tell you what, some of those calls are just so eye-opening, where you're there just basically grabbing it by the hand saying, all right, let's go talk to somebody. Then at that point, we follow up with them. Hey, you know, and our ultimate goal, but with the way our schedules are and the way that, you know, an officer can't work 24/7, is we'd really like to be able to focus some individual officers if they have a good rapport with this person and kind of not really be a sponsor, but be their go-to. So it's as far as checking up maybe a couple days after or the following day, how are you doing? And then just continuing that trail. And that's something we're gonna track as far as, hey, when's the last time we spoke to Bear? We haven't heard from him in a little bit. Let's go check on him and see how he's doing. I know he had a rough week last week. Things such as that.
And Chief, if I can interrupt just for 1 second. So one of the things that get DC Fitzmyer and I'm really excited about this program is that, you know, since I became an officer, we talked about proactive policing. But this is one of the best examples that I've seen of us really being proactive as a department to not just put a Band-Aid on the situation. There's a lot of times when we respond to things that are criminal in nature that we just put a Band-Aid on it. Maybe someone goes to jail, maybe we separate folks for the night, but that's pretty much it. What makes me excited about this program is it's us trying to be proactive in investing in our citizens who maybe just need some help dealing with some of the stresses that are in their lives. You know, as you guys take a look at these packets, there's a couple of things in the front that we did very intentionally. One was to make sure that these folks knew our mission and vision statements. We're very careful in selecting the words in there because we really do mean that we want to champion making sure folks have the dignity and respect that they deserve when they're going through these crises. One of the other letters is a contact letter, and what we did was we made sure that we included a personal business card, a personal email, you know, a departmental telephone number for these officers, because what we didn't want to do was to hand them a generic form that was impersonal. You know, the whole goal of this is to try our best as an agency to reach out personally to folks that are in crisis so they feel like they have an advocate, you know, a representative of the city, an advocate that can help them out. You know, just like Bear said, not to go into too much of story time, but we've really been trying to implement the CIT since we've been trained. You know, one of our officers had spent some time visiting a young man who has autism and had a difficult time interacting with the police because when we would come, it was always a high-stress situation. he interacted with this young man on a handful of occasions. We got sent there for a dispute between mom and dad. The young man answers the door, and honest to goodness, his response was, "Oh, hey guys, come on in." And you know, and that's a win for us. I mean, that's the proactivity that we're talking about, so we can invest with these guys that when that stress hits a certain point, we've just already got an in with them. And so we've tried to be as intentional as we can with personalizing this so they feel like they have an actual name that they can reach out to. You know, the resources in there, we've got great resources through the health department and NAMI. There's a lot of stuff going on, and as we learn about this, it's really nice to not just put a Band-Aid on something, but maybe try to take that next step and be proactive enough to say, hey, not only are we going to help you right now, but we're invested enough that we're going to follow up with you and help you best we can, get you in touch with the professionals that really can maybe make a difference for you. So that's kind of part of our goals, too, is what we're trying to implement here. So.
And one of the last scenarios I kind of wanted to touch on was our community outreach. So a lot of times, if somebody is suffering a mental health crisis or is really having a rough month, a lot of times the neighbors will pick up on it, and sometimes we'll get calls, and it's just, I don't want to say a hindrance to them, but a concern that they have if they have children, the safety and things such as that. So sometimes it's a matter of meeting with the neighbors and going over things and what they're seeing and kind of discussing our vision with them, that if somebody's going through a mental health crisis, our ultimate goal is to get them the help that they need. Sometimes certain crimes may be committed. Sometimes there may be certain trends, but what can we do at the beginning? What are some warning signs and going over things with that? And we had some great success a few months ago where we were able to sit down with some neighbors in one of our communities, and they voiced their concerns. And once we explained to them our training and what our goal was with mental health, it was a complete success. Obviously, we followed up. We spoke with the health department. But at the same point, just to reach out to those neighbors and reach out to the health department, who then built a contact with this person who is going through this mental health crisis, it was awesome. So that was just kind of a community outreach thing, to see the community saying, hey, we have this concern, but as a police department, this is what our goal is. And for them to be able to see where we were coming from, that was pretty positive as well. I'm going to let Garrett get into the next thing. This is our citizens at risk. And you guys will see how this really ties hand in hand with crisis intervention. And we're super excited for this program.
So, you know, in theory, I guess we're kind of explaining what our heart is behind what we're trying to do. But eventually things have to come down to practically how are we going to implement this and what are the tools that we're going to use to do that. Our Citizens at Risk program goes hand in hand with our crisis intervention team. What we've developed and what we hope to implement is this Citizens at Risk registration form. It's in the packet, and what it is, it's a voluntary form that we can contact our citizens with. And basically what it does, it's a registration form that when we go to follow up, so we'll actually take these packets and hopefully within, you know, 12 hours, 24 hours, maybe even sooner than that, we'll have a crisis intervention trained officer respond back to that resident, talk to a family member or talk to the person involved and say, hey, here's what we've got. This is what we would like to do to try to help you in the future. You know, there's all sorts of resources in here, but one of the ones that we would like to use as the police department is this Citizens at Risk registration. And as you go through this, it just lists things. Who are you? You know, what's your name, date of birth, where do you live? What are some contact telephone numbers for you? We go through and ask, you know, do you have any medical concerns that if we found you and needed to relate it to the fire department, we have it on record. Physicians' names and telephone numbers. Medications or allergies or any sort of reactions that you would have to medication. Vehicles. You know, there's times that we find some of our elderly citizens who suffer from dementia. You know, not too long ago, we found a lady that was having some difficulty at the railroad tracks downtown. She's not able to properly communicate to us things that we need to know to get her some help. This registration tries to help us get that information where they're in a good state of mind, and we can catalog it. You know, it goes on to say about things about favorite places to visit, you know, previous address, you know, their habits, their likes or dislikes. You know, one of the things in here that I really enjoy too is it asks, hey, what are some strategies that we can implement for positive interaction with you? What are some triggers to avoid? What are certain words and things that you don't like that just set this person off? And so, you know, it's a pretty involved packet. And again, I said, I understand that some of this information is, you know, it's personal information, it's medical information. They can choose to fill it all out. They can choose to fill a portion of it out. It's completely voluntary. And so what happens is that once this registration is completed to their liking, we've implemented a new software in the department, Power DMS. It's downloaded onto all of our patrol phones. It's on our computers. We have quick access to it. What's really neat about Power DMS is that once this is completed, we can scan that in to our system and generate a folder. And in that folder, when our officers are responding, we also can work with KenCom to create a notification on that call ticket. So we respond to an address in Yorkville for somebody that's outside, not properly clothed for the weather. They're acting very strange and suspicious. The police officer instinct in us would say, okay, what sort of crime is happening here? But we have to consider that maybe this is a mental health crisis that requires a different type of approach. If we're able to catalog these addresses and these folks are willing to participate in this program, our officers can get a notice from KenCom, hey, this is a car house, this is a car register house. From there, our officers can access their Power DMS. They can find a picture of this person. They can find all this stuff that will help them properly respond, you know, to these types of calls for service. And I like this because it can involve a handful of different things. You know, DC had put up here mental health crisis, autism, developmentally delayed, you know, dementia. You know, with folks with dementia, this helps great because sometimes people are not verbal. You know, sometimes people's diabetes are to the point where they can't respond. There's a host of things that they're not able to communicate with us. If we're able to flag them in this car system, then we're able to get this information all together. One of the things that goes along with this, and I didn't include them in the packets, DC's got, you know, like the rubber snap bands, like the bracelets that have the Yorkville Police Department and the telephone number on. And our idea here is that once folks get registered in this program, they understand what's going on, they can wear the bracelet, you know. And so, you know, we find one of our elderly citizens walking through town, they're not verbal. We find one of our young citizens who's nonverbal autistic in town, we find them with these bracelets on. We're able to go and look through our Power DMS, you know, our car packets. We're able to pull up photographs, we're able to pull up family, you know, emergency contact information. It's really neat how all the tools that we have now, we're able to kind of put this all together. I think it's something that, you know, we could really benefit from, you know, if we can get folks to buy into this program.
So as far as with Citizens at Risk, in April this last year, we did our Autism Awareness Month, where we kind of did our community outreach to those that had autism, our youth in the community. And we had over 30 contacts we were able to build in the Yorkville area, and I think that's just barely scraping the surface. So it makes me think, wow, we've built these positive interactions with these 30 families. And that's not even to include the other things up on the board, whether it's mental health, developmentally delayed, or dementia. There are people in our community that have that need, where if somebody goes missing, or somebody, just something such as that, where at 2 o'clock in the morning we come across a nonverbal child, how great would it be to have that information in our hands? So that's really kind of what struck my heart with that. As we mentioned earlier, the resources for these programs, we have the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, huge resource. The Kendall County Health Department, they're just awesome. If we've got a church-related family, we've got our local churches and parishes. And then our CIT follow-up we talked about a little bit. So Garrett and I, one of our big things is going to be tracking these incidents and following it, and also training to the divisions of our department as far as following up to make sure we don't let people go by the wayside and that we don't reach out. So with our data collection, the things that we're going to report to Chief Jensen are going to be the following. Our calls for service. How many CIT calls are we getting monthly? Are we getting yearly? How many petitions do we have to complete where it's an involuntary committal? Then we've got our voluntary and our involuntary committals. How many people have been transported to the hospital? How many response to resistance incidents have we had with these calls where we had to put hands on this person to bring them under control? The amount of follow-ups that we were able to do, the amount of open and closed cases we have, and then how many registrations have we pushed out for CAR, for citizens at risk? These are all things that will help us evaluate the program and what we may need to be able to mend or things that we can see that we're doing really well. And for us, the success of the program will be the result of dedication, compassion, partnerships, and our community effort. And just some follow thoughts I have there. I love hashtags. I guess I'm a Twitter guy. Yorkville Community and Crisis Intervention. That's what we have. Is there anything we're missing that you guys have questions about?
Are you guys going to be working with the Kendall County Mental Health Corps when it's up and running? It's coming in the next, hopefully, 2 months. So I just want to make sure that if there is an incident for you guys, actually, to put cuffs on someone and they're going through some type of mental health crisis, that you also are going to use the service of the Kendall County Mental Health Corps.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that was one thing that we actually, when in speaking with Chief, that we actually intentionally put into our CIT policy, is that through our policy, it will be, our practice to try to funnel these folks into mental health court when it's possible. I mean, because we all understand, these guys don't need jail, they need help. And that's, sometimes when they go through that system, we have no control to actually have them get the help. But yeah, that was one of the things that I guess we forgot to mention, that we specifically put it in there because we want to make sure that all our guys knew that, one of our primary focuses is to get them what they need to do.
You've spoken to Eric about that too?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Yep. Great question.
Didn't fall on deaf ears. So all we can do is work.
No, I not only am fully jacked up about this, this is one of the first things I talked to Chief Jensen about when he was about to come aboard. Because that's one of the bragging rights that Oswego has, is how many of their officers are CIT trained. And Bear, just through yours and I's interaction about focusing on mental health as something that isn't necessarily something to shy away from or need some training for, this is more of a, you are not trained humanity. And I think the tracking aspect of it is allowing us to utilize technology to not put on the kid gloves, so to speak, but to actually allow us to improve the way we communicate. So, super high fives. Jackie, you got anything on that?
Am I on? Okay. I think it's great. I've raised a mentally ill child, and there are a lot of times police here, and there was no follow-up. And, it would probably help sometimes when you're going through that. Just so I think that's great that you're going to touch base back with the families that are having a crisis. Just so you, sometimes you just feel alone when you're in that situation, and you have a like my son, is bipolar and would do things, or my other son's an addict. It's just nice to have that feedback. Kind of makes you feel like you're not so alone. So I really appreciate that you're doing this. I think it's long overdue. So I commend all of you for getting on board and doing it and making our police department better. So thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, do you guys have a goal? Or is your goal to have every officer trained?
Yes.
So do you think that could happen?
It will happen with the mandates by the Illinois Training Standards Board, and for acceptance into crisis intervention to be trained with that 40-hour class, you have to be a 2-year police officer. And as far as that 2-year mark, fortunately now, in our agency, we just had a bunch at their 2-year mark, I think, today. So I think we just have two that aren't at their 2-year mark now, or maybe 2 or 3. But now it's going to be a matter. We're reserving those spots. These spots for a training class, when they're posted, Ray and I are on the website to reserve them. And it's literally like concert tickets, where it's a matter of getting these slots where it is in such demand, because this is where we are as a profession. This is what everybody wants. So, I mean, our guys will travel, you know, into the suburbs if need be to get this training. And, you know, people are asking me, when can I go, when can I go? And it's so cool to see the buy-in that our staff has and the feedback that we've gotten after going to this class, because it's not just learning about wellness for other people. It's bringing wellness to yourself as well. And it was pretty powerful. So, but yes, the goal is every officer.
Awesome. Is there a way to discern one officer who CIT trained from another? Secret handshake, passwords, code book?
These awesome pins that we have at CIT.
As long as there's a way to know, I know who to tickle. when are we making this official? I know this is more of like a presentation of the program, but is this something that's going to be quote unquote mandated in the your SOPs? Yeah.
So this is going to be going live this month. So Garrett and I are going to be training our shifts and our staff. Chief Jensen is going to take the pen to paper and sign off and approve the policy, and we're going to be going live by the end of the month. So.
One of the nice things that, you know, we talk about, and you guys are, you know, building this new building, Joel, to bring training like this to the facility that we're going to be doing as a city, we're going to be able to bring these types of training out so that it's not only Yorkville police officers, but Kendall County, Oswego, Plano, Sandwich, Montgomery, and any other city that's in and around us can get into training like this. And we're going to have the facility that we can run that. And so not just this type of training, but any type of leadership, any type of mental health, any type of training where we can hold 40, 50 people in that training room. That's why this new facility, it's huge. It's absolutely huge for the operations of what we do as a police department. So.
Love it.
I think you make a good point when you said this is something that's going to impact us as officers. Because rather than having the feeling that your job is essentially dealing with the dredge of society, you can also look at yourself and I made a difference for this guy. I made a difference for this family. I made a difference for this community, this subdivision. So I'm all for it. I think you guys are doing a wonderful job.
And that's what's been interesting.
Yeah.
I know you guys got stuff to do. But watching the guys on the street, because most of our interactions, let's face it, they're argumentative, they're negative. But it's because we deal with folks when they're having a bad day. I've watched our guys go through this training, and then the first time they go to implement it, and they have success with it, like Bear was saying, where the guy, he wants to fight you to begin with, and at the end, he hugs our officer, they're sold, hook, line, and sinker. Because they walk away, and they're like, oh my goodness, that was awesome. I mean, I think it improves their well-being, like you're saying, just as much as it does those guys, and it just, they have those positive interactions, and then the next time, it's amazing. They got all the time in the world to sit and talk to these people, and it just... It pays dividends because I think it's legitimate how we need to be approaching our citizens now, you know, so.
Everyone benefits.
Absolutely.
Right. Good work. Just on that same kind of token, what DVT was kind of alluding to as far as being able to kind of take care of yourself as officers, is there any look into the rest of this year to kind of figure out a way as far as mental health for our officers? I know that Chief Zeman in Aurora was talking about a P2P program, which was cop to cop, because I know that most cops aren't open to going to see a counselor who isn't a cop. And I know that having groups of officers talking about, you know, what they do as officers will end up kind of turning into something different. But is there anything on your docket for the upcoming year that would focus more on the mental health of the officers that we have in the YPD?
Absolutely. So actually in March, we need to add it to our agenda to give you guys an update on our 2020 goals, but also where we're at with our 2021 goals. Our goal this year, we have one goal for the department. Obviously, we need to run our calls for service and traffic. Our job does not stop. But our goal that we're going to focus on for the department is more internal. We're going to focus on our staff. With COVID-19, with all the civil unrest, we got to make sure we're well. So we have a wellness team that has 8-9 members on it, both civilian and sworn, officer to chief of police. And we actually have talked about how can we bring wellness to our organization. And we're focusing on different categories. We're talking about financial wellness. How do you prepare for retirement? How do you balancing a checkbook, it could be. Saving money, really talking about the financial end of things. And then talking about life insurance, health insurance, talking about ways to, estate planning so that you can protect yourself, your family, your assets in the position that we're in, talking about mental illness in the law enforcement side, and really focusing on family and PD. So we have the information is out to our wellness team right now to kind of finalize things, and you're gonna see a lot more, we're gonna be doing a lot more PD together type activities with officers and family so that we can bring that family focus, not just to someone's home, but within our building to take care of one another. On a side note to that, Joel, is tonight's a great example with the car crash that we're going. From what I'm hearing and the texting that I'm going back and forth on that call, it's not a good scene. We're gonna be checking in with our staff tonight, making sure they're good. We'll check in with them again tomorrow. The other part is we're gonna be having all the officers go to, and I believe Jackie, you brought this up when we discussed this a couple months ago. We're gonna have all of our officers go to a mental health checkup. We're gonna hire an agency. I'm gonna pull the money out of our training budget, and we're gonna hire an agency where an officer gets one-on-one time, 55 minutes with a person that really focuses. This is a first responder type focus. And they're gonna have 55 minutes to sit there and really work with this person. If the officer chooses just to sit there and not say anything, well, that's their choice. But this is a place for them to be vulnerable for this person and for themselves, and so that we can make sure they're right here when they go out on the street to deal with the public. So that's our focus 2021.
Good. Love it. Keep doing it, guys. I think everybody that pays attention knows that the YPD is taking care of us, but I've been focused on this, and I think you guys know that about you making sure that you make it a priority that you take care of you. Because if you're operating with an empty tank, you're not going to be a good police officer. So I would much rather you take care of you before we got to somehow figure out how to take care of you and the issue at hand. So kudos for jumping in front of it. So Garrett, Bear, rock and roll. Is that all? Are we all good with that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Bear, Garrett, please be safe on your call. If not, you owe me a beer.
Thanks for letting me steal some of your time tonight, you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great work, y'all. All right, so we will head back to the top of the agenda. Are there any citizens' comment? Are you sure? Okay, moving on to the minutes. Minutes from the meeting in November. It was a great meeting. I wasn't there. Any comments or questions or corrections? Sweet. All right. Do we have to approve those, Bart? All right. All in favor of approving, give a thumbs up. All right. Three thumbs up, Marlis. You missed it. Moving on to the monthly report for October, November. Mr. Chief.
All right. So we've got the monthly report of October and November. I'll go through it fairly quickly. Overtime hours pretty consistent with where we're at. Currently, and then as compared to the previous year, you'll look and see that most of our overtime is reimbursed through HIDA. One of the things that you're going to start seeing in the November and December reports, we received an IDOT grant for traffic enforcement. It's DUI and speeding enforcement. That's not saying we're writing more tickets. I will tell you that right now. But we're out there looking for DUIs on the road to make sure our roads are safer in town. So you may see some overtime hours specific to grants. That's what that is all about. That is 100% reimbursable as well, along with vehicle expenses for the city. When you look at the community policing initiatives, we really had a busy month. One of the things we really, truly enjoy participating in is BizBoo with the Yorkville Chamber of Commerce. We have been active. I know Bart goes to those meetings, but I also go to those meetings, and the Chamber has been fantastic for our police department. So we get to the BizBoo. Obviously the business, Home Depot, and there's just so many businesses in town that just support us. So going through that, it's pretty cool to see. And we try to always put as much as we can in the monthly report so you guys can see how the business community and the public, you see where we're out. October was kind of a busy month for traffic crashes. We had 51. So 35 of them involved crashes outside of private property. We had 16 on private property. So car backing out of a parking spot at Kohl's hits another car, that's your private property crash. So we've been pretty busy during the month of October with crashes. And then moving on to directed patrols, obviously you'll see that, you know, we continue to hit 47 and 34. If you're driving in this town, you will see a squad car on one of those two highways. If you also look at our pass on that we send out, you guys are seeing, well, we're making a lot of stops. We're not writing a lot of tickets. The tickets we write are typically for the offenses of driving suspended, revoked, DUI, that sort of thing. When somebody needs a ticket based on the speed that they're getting, but our officers are really focused on what's the purpose of a ticket? It's to correct behavior. Or I should say the purpose of the stop. Sometimes a ticket is what's needed. Sometimes just having a written warning and a good conversation with someone is something that our guys do. Get over to reports. We'll see that our reports overall, our criminal reports are down 118 as compared to last year. Part one and part two crimes, we're still tracking below. However, you are going to see during the month of December's monthly report that number of our part one and part two, actually part one crimes, we have been getting killed with identity theft reports. Unemployment scam. So those all fall under identity theft. And so you're gonna see where one of the goals we had of reducing our part one and part two crimes, I think we're still gonna come in under for part two crimes, but our part one crimes are gonna be way, way over. When you get to the annual report, we're gonna take the culmination of all of our monthly reports, putting it into an annual report for you guys in February or March. It'll be a color document. It's actually gonna look really good when we're done. You're gonna see that the reports that we took this year, while we didn't necessarily meet our goal, there are certain things with this unemployment scam we can't control. And that's statewide. I mean, every PD, every city, village, it are getting hit with those.
So, I got it right.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, thought you had a question. Sorry, Joel.
No, I was saying I had my identity stolen twice, October and December, through an unemployment scam. Yeah, so add two to the list.
You might be part of that 200 and some that we've taken already. And if you looked at today's pass on, you'll see many, many more. So it's pretty scary, but.
Are people actually reaping money out of this?
So what they do is when they file the unemployment, what they're hoping is gonna happen is, what typically happens is the person will get with money on it. And sometimes that card is diverted to the person who's committing the crime. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
True.
So it's, I can't say all of them, they're not getting money on all of them. But
that's
so
the goal. That's the goal. They it's like throwing a net into the water and seeing what you're reeling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty scary what we can find out on the internet. So.
Yeah, on mine, I actually just got a debit card.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got my second debit card.
Yeah. And it's interesting, it's under my maiden name. So I haven't had that name in 35 years. And that's what they
my maiden name too.
Did they get in your maiden name too?
All right, so then going to November, you're gonna see that of the 106 hours, you have, you know, just about half, actually over half of it's reimbursable overtime. Again, the overtime is just not, it's not a call out, stay over. People, when we have a call out or we have a certain late call, like tonight, our day shift is held over because of the crash on 71. That's kind of what call out stay over means. You'll see that's primary, you know, the secondarily as to why we have the overtime during the month of November. If you go into the community policing initiatives, again, you're going to see several things out in the community. We're trying to put some traffic crash safety stuff up there. And it's funny, the picture that's on there, we actually talked to the driver of that car, and he was amazing when he said, "You really want to put that up?" He goes, "I'd love it if you would, and let people know I was tired that day." That's what happens when you drive tired. We also had a retirement of Dale Aronson, 28 years with our department. We're going to talk more about that at the January 26th meeting when we recognize Dale, Sergeant Jelinuski, and we have a promotion of Officer Hayes to Sergeant Hayes. And then you have our Thanksgiving dinner pictures we have there. In December, you'll see our Shop with a Cop, which was pretty cool. We had a total of 460 hours of training in the month of November. You look at traffic crashes, again, it was a pretty busy month. We had 45 total, 10 were on private property, 35 crashes overall. We had 6 personal injury crashes. When we get to the other chart that shows the number of crashes, our personal injury crashes, for the most part, are very minor crashes. You will see that we've had 3 fatal crashes this year. In 2020, obviously, today, we'll have another, unfortunately. Our directed patrol areas, you'll see that 4734, again, were the high numbers on there. So what we do with directed patrol detail is when somebody comes in and they complain about, hey, we've got a spot where we know cars are speeding, or you guys come to me and say, hey, can we watch traffic on this particular road? We don't always want to throw resources at it because resources are money. So we try to utilize some other resources like our speed sign. A lot of times we get our CSOs out there to do some radar. And when we determine that, you know, we may have a problem, we've still got to do some research to see, that's when they go on this directed patrol detail list. And that's when you see when we start throwing details and the number of hours, that's our patrol staff sitting out there for 5.41 hours in downtown Yorkville for the month of November to make sure people are slowing down through town. See our traffic enforcement numbers for November of 2020 as compared to November of 2019. You know, you're going to see a big increase. And again, the citations are more based off of an arrest that's made with them. Not saying all of them, but some of them. When you get over to our criminal investigations, one of the nice things about at least the month of November is, you know, we've had a decrease in the number of total cases assigned, which is good because it allows our detectives to get caught up. We've had some cases are not getting easier. They're getting a lot more detailed and they're taking a lot more time. So anytime we can get a month where we have less cases than the previous month, the year before, and you can kind of track that, it's a good thing. We kind of talked about reports already. We're, like I said, we're still a little bit below, but you're going to see that going up when we get to the December report. And overall, our calls for service, and we track, I should say, incidents on the second to last page, we're below where we were at last year, which is a very good thing. But you can see by month how it breaks down. You know, January, February are typically pretty busy months, and they were in 2020, and they're starting to be that way in 2021. And that's the monthly report.
Wow. All right, any comments, concerns, questions? New nicknames for Chief Jensen? Okay. All right, moving on to adjudication reports for November and December 2020. Chief Squiggles?
Pretty typical ordinance. There's a few in here I just wanted to kind of point you out to. If you look at the docket dated 11-9 of 20, you see a parking of non-motorized vehicles. We've had several complaints the month of November and December of trailers being parked unattached to vehicles on the roadway. You know, we do our best to warn and just go and talk to people first. And when that doesn't work, you know, that's when you have an ordinance ticket that is written. So that's the one ticket. You don't normally see that. That's why I'm pointing that out. There was in the docket 11-16, the obstructing sidewalks. That was written by Gina. I'm not sure the details behind that. There were no notes on the ticket, so I really can't answer. And again, I'm pointing out ones that aren't typically written. When you guys look at the docket, you'll see things that are pretty typical. When you see paraphernalia and you see marijuana possession, paraphernalia or marijuana, typically it's in a car or it's a minor in possession of. off-street parking. There was another one on the dock at 11:30. That was by Gina. I'm not sure what the details were there. If you need me to find out, I can definitely do that. I can speak with Gina tomorrow. Throughout the rest of the November and December, again, really nothing too unusual. I'll entertain any questions you guys may have.
Yeah, where do you buy 8-foot weeds? I don't really have any questions regarding any of the dockets. Dan, Jackie?
I'm good.
Fascinating. All right, moving on to the information only, but Yorkville Police Department adoption of the 10 shared principles.
So the 10 shared principles is a, maybe it's a program. I don't know if I hesitate to say program, but it was a program that was developed with the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police and the NAACP. And they started back in March of 2018, where they had meetings between both groups, law enforcement throughout the state of Illinois, as well as the NAACP representatives. And they talked about how can we bring law enforcement, how can both sides work together to work on the issues that we all see in law enforcement and the different neighborhoods with communities of color. And so they discussed and developed the 10 shared principles, which you can see as one of the attachments on the documents that we sent to you in this packet. So we adopted this back in June of 2020. I went on the IACP website. I completed the application, officially adopted it with the IACP. However, with everything going on at that time, I didn't want to have it look like we did it just because of the time. It's too important for that. So I brought it to, we wanted to wait till the beginning of this year to bring it to this committee, and we're actually going to have the president of the Illinois Chiefs Association come out at the January 26th board meeting to present the Yorkville Police Department and the United City of Yorkville with the 10 shared principles, the one poster that we will have framed and hanging. I can get additional ones hanging within City Hall and or within our building, as well as in our police department. We're also identifying training and different, there's a 7-minute video we want our staff to see, we want them to understand, this is why this program was developed. It's easy to say we're gonna do this program, but if they have the understanding as to why it was done, it's a lot easier to see, understand, and absorb, and then follow. So we're going to be presenting this to the City Council at the January 26th meeting, and I think this is a very good thing. It's a very good thing for law enforcement. Nationwide, this is only statewide, but we are the first state to lead the way with this sort of program or partnership with the NAACP. It's pretty cool to see. So, questions?
Pretty timely considering the application of the CIT program and the CAR program. So I think everybody knows I'm pretty adamant about making sure that cops remember that people are people regardless of their color or their mental state. So this kind of goes in line with my invitation to Chief Jensen back in May or June when I asked him to go protest with me, because he knows how damn pissed off I am about how things are. And I appreciate the fact that you understand how things look. I went on a website and I printed something off. Let's talk about it now. I think that shows not only, you are pretty old, so maturity, but more importantly, it shows that you have an idea of what it could look like. Because the goal isn't to look pretty when everybody else looks ugly. The goal is to provide a service and to not kill people, but to offer police services. And understanding that if you have, 10 dots or 10 line items on a piece of paper, they're not always going to be closely adhered to. But if you are monitoring the behavior of your officers and you have leadership like Bear and Ray and yourself, continuing to drive these tenants home. And this document does hang in City Hall, wherever City Hall may be, in the lobby of the City Hall and the police department. This should be over every urinal in the freaking locker room, because I don't care where you are. This is what we adhere to as a base understanding of what it takes to be a YPD officer. So I'm incredibly supportive of this type of activity. I don't really care if people think things are gestures or don't actually have any weight to them. I trust that you will make sure that this is not only adhered to, but recited quite often, whether it be shift change, we tattoo it on the back of Chris Funkhauser. I want to make sure that people understand that this is what we adhere to. And I think that's something that you should brag about. So not necessarily bragging about the timing of it, but this is something that you should talk about with your officers all the time. And I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
I would chip into the cost of that tattoo if needed.
Well, I was thinking about actually tattooing Chris's entire body on my back, because I'm pretty sure it could fit. Any other comments or questions? All right. Is Alderman Funkhauser there? Does he have any comments? He didn't attend this meeting? For shame. For shame. All right, at 6:55.
Now, wait. Additional what? Business. Additional. I just have something for the chief. So, in the neighborhoods, in like my neighborhood, that's older, and there are no curbs or gutters, and when people park on the parkway, so I'm talking between the road and the sidewalk, I was told that doesn't come under property maintenance, that comes under the police. Can you clarify who is responsible for cars that park ripping up the grass we put in, plow still can't plow around them very efficiently, and I'd like to know who's in charge of that.
So
is it you?
I would think that, well, because it's on a roadway, or it's part of the roadway with easement, that would be our agency. If you can let me know the addresses you're talking about, we will make sure we address the issue.
Okay. I just noticed, it's been an ongoing issue for years in this one location, but I did notice when, so it snowed, they should have moved their vehicle, they didn't, and then our guys didn't get a clear path through. So.
Can you let us know which inspector told you that, and then we can get the context from him?
It might have been even Pete told me that.
Okay, a while ago, not recently.
That's a while ago. Okay. It's just a gray area in a way, it's property maintenance because they've totally obliterated the grass and it's mud. So, but it's Pete's, our property. They're in, you know, the parkway.
Pete has been fantastic. Just for, reaching out. Hey, JJ, this is what we've got. Just want to let you know. And Gina, she's amazing as well. So.
And for the most part, you know, they've been doing this for years. But when it comes to the snow and they're not moving their car, do they get a ticket for that? I mean, they're really not in the road, but they are making it difficult for the plows.
Right.
That's something that we need to look into, I think.
Yeah, send me those addresses. We'll look into it with the snow that's been going on. You know, we first snowstorm of the year, we always try to, you know, kind of let, hey, remember you can't do this. Now that we're into our third storm, or the next storm will be our third or fourth storm, we will be pushing it.
Okay. Well, alrighty, thank you. I'm done.
Anyone else? Sorry, I didn't use the A word, the additional business. All right, 6:58, we okay to adjourn? Does anybody oppose adjournment? That would be really stupid if you did, because I've already decided that I'm gone. I'm just gone.
Everybody, have a good evening.